And ladies and gentlemen, he's one of the all-time greats, my buddy, Mr. John Wayne.
You're listening to the John Wayne Gritcast with me, Ethan Wayne.
The hell I was.
We're talking all about the life and legacy of my father.
John Wayne.
Mr. John Wayne.
John Wayne is the United States of America.
Slap some bacon on a biscuit and let's go.
Hey, everybody. Today we're going to talk to Teddy Wingfield. The Wingfields are a family that lived down on the border of Arizona and Mexico in a town called Nogales. His parents met mine a long time ago, and the two families had a lot of experiences together, recreational experiences, business experiences, film experiences. Teddy's brother was in Big Jake with me. He played one of the bad guys. Teddy crossed the Atlantic on my father's boat, the Wild Goose. Teddy's a little older than I am, so he has a lot of memories that I don't have. I hope you enjoy it. Well, I guess, do you remember the first time, like what was the first interaction between your family and mine?
When we were kids here, I think we were 11 years old, so it had to be in the 50s, late 50s. Stuart Granger, who was our neighbor, and Gene Simmons, did a movie in Alaska called North to Alaska with your dad.
Oh, I had no idea.
And your dad, for some reason why, he was here with Stuart Granger, and he had Ward Bond with him. And Stuart Granger brought him over, and that's for, you know, we were all kids with big eyes looking at John Wayne. And they spent the afternoon with my mom and dad at that time. And then Stuart Granger and sold his ranch and moved out of here. And then we take a trip to Hawaii on the Lurline or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that boat.
And that picture that I have of my mom and your dad and Aisa was on the boat there when we left.
Did you guys go together, or was random that you connected on the boat?
It was just random. We all met, and we got my mom and dad and your mom and dad got to talking about your dad being here with Stuart Granger. And on the cruise over, they got to be kind of, you know, friends. So then we get to Hawaii, you're staying in one hotel, we're right next to you. And then your dad was making a movie, was it Donovan's Reef?
We'd have to look up what year that was. I don't know if,
yeah,
I don't
Donovan's
think I was
Reef
there.
Because the other guy was on the in the ship with us,
John Ford?
Well, maybe he was there, but I remember, who was the one in the movie where your dad shot him in a gunfight in Ruidoso, Texas, or Anaheim.
What year would that be?
Which one?
What year would that be?
There was Donovan's a movie. Reef? There was a movie that they made where he helped. He was a Texas Ranger and he went to New Orleans and arrested a guy for murder. Stuart Whitman, I think, was in it.
Oh, was that the Comancheros?
Comancheros.
Comancheros. Yeah.
Who played the bad part where he was half scalped?
Lee Marvin?
Lee Marvin. He was on the ship, too.
You're kidding me.
No.
Oh, my gosh. What a trip.
So going back to Honolulu, we all having dinner together. Your folks and my folks are. You know, all us kids, you know, we're all kind of big-eyed. And then your dad says, let's go to Kauai. Do you know the McCaslin family? He went to USC with your dad.
McLaglin?
McCaslin.
McCaslin. No, but the name sounds familiar.
Okay, well, his daughter went to the U of A the same time I did. And so we stayed with your mom and dad at their house on Kauai. There was a right on the beach, and there was a big hole there where the water would come in and just spray up on everybody.
Interesting.
And I remember every time we went down to the hotel, we'd run over about 6,000 frogs. Kauai is full of frogs. And then while we're there, and I think on that tape, Bing Crosby was there. So your dad saw Bing Crosby. And
wow. And this is when you had to take a boat to go to Hawaii. How many days did that take?
It was fun. I think it was 5 days. I can't remember.
Wow.
We all got off and they put things on us.
Because I can remember my oldest brother, Michael, complaining about doing a production. And he said, yeah, Dad would fly over in that flying boat and land on the bay, the big clippers. But we had to go by boat. It took 5 or 6 days to get there. So it would be all bent out of shape about trying to do a production and get back and forth and do all that. Hawaii must have been amazing then.
I was just so young, you know, and it was all new to us because we really didn't know your mom and dad.
Mm.
And I don't even know if you were born then. I don't think
I was there.
Aisa was little, and Ann was like 5 years older than Aisa.
Ann was?
Yeah, she was born in 51, and Aisa was born, in 55?
She's 6 years older than me, 62, 58.
Okay, so there was a, maybe a 7 year difference, but they knew each other.
Or 56.
And then Ann was a stand in McClintock somewhere in the crowd.
She was?
Yeah. And then.
I had a horrible crush on Ann. Might have been the first girl I saw where I went, oh, wow, that's something's going on there. She's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
She didn't. Cancer got her too. So we're in Hawaii, and then we all go home. We flew home, and I guess your dad did the movie Donovan's Reef with John Ford and Lee Marvin. So how we ended up in Europe, I don't know, but they got to be friends. And I don't know if your dad was here. My mom and dad flew over to see them. Stayed at the what was that big fancy hotel there on the beach? The Reef something or
in Newport?
In Newport, yeah.
The Balboa Bay Club?
No, the one right on the beach. It was a big hotel there. I can't remember. But your dad threw a big party, and my mom and dad were there at the party. And at that party, I guess this trip to Spain came about, and your dad said, well, why don't you meet us over there? So next thing I know, we're flying to Europe, and we end up in Brussels, and then we fly to Mallorca, and then your dad's ship's there, and we're, next thing I know, we're going around the island, and we had picnics. We used to rent a bus for like 10 bucks a day and have picnics at all these little places on the island.
And that's on the Wild Goose, right?
On the Wild Goose, yeah. So we get on the Wild Goose, and we go to Menorca, which is not inhabited, and we spend some time there. And then we came back to Mallorca and went to Formentor. And that's where the whole Seventh Fleet showed up. And the USS Enterprise was there. So Captain Pete, who was the captain then, I'm not sure if Bert was on the ship then or not. But Captain Pete took your dad over. All of a sudden, this huge opening in the ship. A ladder comes down, your dad climbs up, and the Admiral takes him through the whole ship on closed TV. So that night, your dad hosts a party for the Admiral and some of his top, I don't know, generals and colonels or whatever they were in the Navy. So we're sitting there, you know, all these little whalers were coming over with all these Navy guys and their whites, and they got drunk. So as they left, we were helping them get back on. You know, here's these little seamen down there, and they're looking at these guys that they have to salute all the time, and we were putting them on the boats.
Man.
And then we went back to Barcelona, and your dad docked there. And everybody wanted to see, they called him John Viney. And your dad finally couldn't go out in public because he was mobbed all the time. So he let me sit in the back with John Viney car, just like, and I tell him, no, John Viney, but he's glad you're here.
The little autograph cards.
Yeah. I still got one there.
Child was plagued with carrying a stack of those autograph cards around my dad.
But your dad was so nice to people. And he always said, they're the people that made me famous. They're buying the tickets, and I take care of them. But there were just too many of them. So while we're there, we go to the Ritz Hotel for lunch. And we're sitting there having lunch. And this huge guy walks in from Africa with two French interpreters. And your dad, you know, we're all disappeared. They're looking at your dad. And the French lady spoke English and said, I hate to bother you, but this is the premier of the Congo. I think his name was Tshombe. And so he wanted to meet John Wayne, so he told your dad about all the movies he saw. So he goes back to the Congo, and then, I don't know, Lubumba, I think, assassinates him about 6 months later. And maybe I have their names mixed up, but it was funny, wherever we went, I was a young teenager. You weren't very old.
Yeah, I was brand new.
Yeah, so everywhere we went, your dad was loved. And then he left Barcelona, and we went up the coast what do they call that, Emily, the Coast of the Soul?
Costa Brava is Barcelona.
Going to the Pyrenees. Costa Brava. And we stop in these little tiny towns. And the whole town would come up. It reminded me years later of seeing that Godfather movie back in Italy. They'd all come out with black hats, starched shirts, and black suits. And the mayor would be there, and they were honoring your dad to please come into the city and have lunch with him and stuff like that. And he went out and, you know, I told him how much he appreciated them, but he just couldn't do it. So then he'd get back inside. They could be playing gin rummy, and I'd be giving cards out again.
Wow. You know, at some point.
And we ended up in Septi, France. And then we all went ashore and had lunch there. Nobody could speak French. So we finally got the gal in the restaurant to feed us something. And
well, can we slip back to the Congo for a second? Because yeah. In the archive, 2004 or 5, we came across a document. It was called Statesman Mining Company. And I think that was Ernie Safdick and my dad. And I don't know who else was in it. But it was a group of friends. And at one point, they had the mineral rights to the Congo.
Really?
Yeah. See, but it was with the, who was, there was a tough guy there, Mobutu or something like that. I don't know if I'm getting the name
well,
right.
Well, they were all tough guys, but they kept assassinating each other.
Yeah.
And then the belt, the, which European country was had the Congo at that time? They finally kicked them out too.
I don't know.
I think it was Belgium.
So we have that document in the archive, not be in Texas, but all these, in having these conversations with people that were around more than I was, it's interesting because you slowly see some of these dots connecting. But man, that guy covered a lot of ground. John Wayne.
I mean, he did, yeah. And Ernie and what was his wife's name? They were on the ship with their son, Myrna.
Myrna and Tommy.
Tommy. I remember Tommy was a lot younger than I was, I think. How old is Tommy now? About 65 or?
I don't know how old Tommy was. We talked to him.
He's Aisa's
age. So.
And then they sent me a picture that you'd put in a magazine of my dad reading a paper on the Wild Goose with mm-hmm. your dad and myself and Ernie. And then there was a photographer on the ship. With the big thick glasses, his name was Double Exposure.
Oh,
so wherever he went,
David
he was
Sutton?
Taking pictures of us, and we were all going.
I think that was David Sutton. He had the big
thick
giant glasses.
His name was Double Exposure because all he did was take. He was supposed to document the trip for your dad. And then that was his son next to him. Everybody thought that was you, but that was his son. So we leave Barcelona, go up the Costa Brava, end up in I think in Sète, France, which was a Pyrenees French town. And then next thing I know, William Holden's first wife was on the ship with us. Her name was, she was in the Alaskan movie.
North to Alaska?
North to Alaska. Mm. And I can't remember what her name was. French name.
I have no idea.
So she and I'm trying to go back. There was another woman on the ship with us. I think it was Henry Hathaway's wife.
Mm. Skip.
And her grandmother was raised in Nogales. I remember her talking
really?
About that. And so we ended up in, we went all through that French part of the French coast. And then when we got to Marseille, we saw that picture of Jeff coming into the harbor. We got off the boat and flew to Rome. And then I don't know where your dad went. I think he went to Italy himself and then came back to film the movie.
I see. They were making that film Circus World over there.
Circus World, yeah. That's right.
And Aisa has memories of that as a little girl.
Okay.
She,
it was all done
she recounted some of that. But it's funny, we all have our own little memories, and they're just, you know, memories not reliable all the time. Everything's just a little...
But the funny thing, and ask your mom if she remembers, your dad was having a political conversation, which wasn't going his way, and he got very possessive in what he wanted to talk about. And finally, your mom got so mad at him, she said, I've had enough of this. Stop it. I can't stop it because I'm right. So she walks over, takes his hat off, grabs his toupee, takes a drink, pours it on his head, takes the toupee, puts it back on his head, and goes to bed.
Are you kidding?
Swear to God, I'm sitting there watching the whole thing. And your dad wipes his head and says, if I live to be 100, I'll never understand women.
Oh, my gosh, that's...
And then, where did we go from there? Then I guess you guys came over from McClintock.
Down here?
Yeah, down here.
So Well, I don't know if I was born from McClintock. What year was McClintock?
Yeah, 69. Right? You were here.
69? That was like 61.
Or maybe it was 61. I'm sorry. I don't know. It was after the...
63, it says.
So it was right there with the cruise. I don't know which was first, but it was right there. Maybe because your dad stayed with my mom and dad at the house for like 2 or 3 weeks, and then they'd pick him up and take him to the casting here in Sonoyta, and then he went up to Old Tucson and stayed in the hotel there on the freeway.
Interesting.
And then they did part of the movie right here when he was the father of who was the young actress in it with your brother Patrick.
Stephanie Powers.
Yeah. So part of it was right here on the river.
Oh, right here where they did
it. Yeah. Where he tells her he's not going to give her the ranch. He's going to give her 500 cows or something like that.
That was a good movie.
It was.
Some great lines in that movie. Yeah, I really like it. It's funny, a lot of people, you know, they get that wisdom or those pearls of wisdom, that sort of moral compass, the direction from his films, but I missed it for a while. I didn't absorb that right off the bat. I think because I came from the back. He was just my dad, so I wasn't really listening to that part of him.
Well, my dad was kind of, you know, they're the same generation. They're only like 3 years apart in age.
Mm.
And I never understood my dad.
Really? Your dad was?
My dad was born in 1909. Your dad was born, what?
I had no idea, 1907.
Seven, yeah.
I thought Ralph was much younger.
No. And it's funny how the two of them clicked. I mean, there was no rhyme or reason, but they just liked each other.
Well,
and he stayed here a lot of times with us. And one night, they're playing Gin Rummy, which they played every night. And there was a cow trader and a rancher in California named Phil Statler. And he calls my dad, and of course, they were all using vulgar words, L-U-S-O-B. Ralph, I got Benny Binion here, and we're at the Horseshoe Club. Benny Binion says, you're full of BS. You don't know John Wayne. My dad's going, well, put him on. Duke's right here. He'll talk to him. So all of a sudden you hear Binion going, oh, Mr. Wayne, you got to come to Vegas and stay at the Horseshoe Club with
yeah.
me.
Yeah. There's at the South Point, they have a nice big statue of Benny Binion.
They do.
Yeah, a nice big bronze on a horse.
I've met him twice, and I met him once in El Paso, and I guess he was tough. Yeah, that's just something I don't, excuse me.
No worries.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard he was well-respected, that's for sure.
Very well-respected, and he was the one that really started Las Vegas, I believe, one of the, you know, before the, he got there in the 40s, I think.
Yeah, Michael Gaughan owns the South Point, and he has a beautiful, I mean, it's as high as the ceiling is in this room. Nice big bronze of him on a horse. And the South Point's kind of set up for equestrian events.
Okay.
I think they can put like 1,500.
Well, didn't he bring the rodeo to Vegas in December? That was his deal for a lot of years.
Benny Binion brought the NFR.
NFR, I think, there. Because it used National to be in Oklahoma Miles. City.
Yeah. Well, it's booming there now. That's how we got to Fort Worth, is we did a mini exhibit during the NFRs at the South Point.
I remember you texted me, and you had, I didn't even know it was you. There's a picture of me with a big cowboy hat on. I thought, who's that? And then I said, it's Ethan. And you said, I'm with a cousin of yours. And I didn't, and then when I realized it was you, I said, who? Because I didn't know you're talking about.
I can't remember. Yeah. There were so many people.
Yeah.
And then that's when Patrick Gotch from the Cowboy Channel and Craig Cavalier, who's redoing the Stockyard, said, you got to come see Stockyard. It'll be a good place for your exhibit. So,
well, it would be today because that's a big deal for us. I was telling Emily, someday we would need to go over there just to see it.
Yeah, you have to go see your hat. It'll be on display.
Okay, well, it was just funny how that hat sat there and nobody ever touched it.
Were you ever close to Louis Johnson, Louis Johnson, or Alice?
I remember him because I remember going to the bull sale.
Bull sale, yeah.
That picture there of all of us.
Mm.
And I remember my dad, we'd all stay at the Francisco Grande, and we went there to the sale. Just one time, I think, I was there.
I drove through.
And Louis had a big old cigar in his mouth.
Oh, yeah.
And they were selling bulls, and he'd go, and Dick went over to tell my daddy, Ralph, he's using me. He can't sell the bulls, so I got to go sell them. He goes, Duke, get over there and hug that guy. You're selling these bulls. Give him a scotch or a bourbon.
That's the one place where I saw my dad poisoned by alcohol. Because he had to have a drink with everybody.
Yeah.
Because they were selling those bulls, and they were selling them for big numbers.
Big
numbers.
And they had big parties all the time.
He would get carried to bed, and he would be in pain the next morning. Really. That was tough. It was tough duty for him.
I bet it was.
Yeah.
Because I remember he said, Louis said, I can't sell the bull to that guy, but you can.
Yeah, he'd go over and have a drink.
And we got to get a picture of you. And he said, Duke, that'll put $5,000 on the bull. I don't know exactly those words, but I remember that's. I always got a kick out of that.
Louis's wife Alice is doing great.
We heard her podcast.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because I remember the 73. My dad lost a lot of money in 73.
Oh, really?
And we had the same bank that you guys did.
Wow. And all which she was sudden, talking about, yeah.
All of a sudden, we didn't get invited to lunch anymore when we went up there because we had all this huge debt and we didn't know how to pay him off. And they finally let us go a little bit, but we had to finally change banks. And it took us about 15 years to catch up because my dad didn't know how to change. Oops. With the cattle business, he was used to, he came here in 38. And he fought cattle the same way for till 1973 when that big crash hit.
Mm.
And everything changed. But if you didn't know how to change with it, you were kind of left behind in the old days. And he finally figured it out, but it took him a long time.
Wow. Yeah, Alice went into some detail on that and how they got through it.
Well, yeah, I think you were like 10 million over your limit, weren't you, at one time?
I guess it was a big number, and that was 1973 numbers. So that's, you know.
And I think they came down here. Your dad brought Donko down here, the guy from Globe, a few times.
Donko Jurevich, yeah.
And I barely remember him, but he had the hotel there in Miami or Globe or somewhere.
Yeah. I just remember him, you know, what a little boy would remember. He was an animated
I remember a figure, but I don't remember much about him. But I do remember the Johnsons because I met him at, I remember them though in Casa Grande in Stanfield.
And then we worked with a company out of Chicago on a John Wayne project, and his son worked at that company and said, "Hey, I'm Donko's son."
Oh, really?
Yeah. So,
well, the lady that owns Zula's here in Nogales started out with Donko. She and her husband did in the 50s.
Mm.
And, of course, your dad loves Zula's. And they had a picture. John Wayne came here for a Zula burger and apple pie.
Is it still here?
No, it finally closed down. This pandemic.
And Donko's who introduced Alice to Louie.
To Louie, I heard, and she didn't go out with him.
And she stood him up,
yeah.
And then Louie made my dad come out to go on the...
Yeah, they went to that steakhouse there on Central, the old steakhouse. What's it called?
Durant's?
Durant's. When I grew up as a kid, and Emily grew up here in Nogales. She's from Chicago. Her dad bought a ranch here. There was, 40,000 people across the line? And maybe 5,000 here, 6,000? And then now there's 500,000 across.
So now there's a 500,000 people in Nogales?
Give or take a lie or two, yes.
What was the name of the... Was there like a green and white restaurant over there?
Green and
was
white.
Was Crosby's there? Or was that Del Rio? Is there a place named Crosby's that you remember?
That might be Del Rio, Texas.
Must be Del Rio. Because, you know, my memories with my dad are, you know, they're just little kids' memories. So,
well, we went, but you were pretty young.
We went to
La Roca a few times.
La Roca, is that
That's still
here?
Across the line.
Okay.
Yeah, it was done by a guy named Jimmy Wilson. He was a big produce guy. And I sent you a picture of my mom and dad and your dad with some actress. What she was doing here, I don't know. That used to be, your dad said, Clark Gable's girlfriend. And I have no idea what her name was.
Hmm.
And then next to him was Jack Warner's step-granddaughter. Because she was, Ann Warner was married before she married Jack Warner.
I don't think he ever went anywhere alone, did he? Did he ever, did he always have a trail of people?
Well, when they came here to the, when he came here, he wanted to be alone. He had a big guy that did massages.
Ralph Volke.
Whatever he was always here.
Yeah.
And then you came a lot.
Yeah, I loved it here.
And then they'd have Paulie Williams from the Oak Bar come over and play gin rummy with him. But he didn't want to see, he just wanted to go to Zula's, and he liked, of course, he and my dad were both in their 70s then.
Mm.
And I guess their life had slowed down a little bit, and your dad was sick.
Yeah.
And probably sicker than we realized.
Well, I had a lot of fun with you and Jeff and Ann. You know, there's some families that I would always be excited to come see you guys, or other people I wasn't that excited to go see in my life. But one day we were down here, I remember it was hot, and we were, you know, castrating.
I saw that. You were probably kept, there was no, that they used to have a powder. There was an antiseptic powder.
Yeah, like
white.
A powder.
So you put it after you castrated on the wound.
Yeah.
And it would coagulate the blood and then have
so
a little antiseptic.
Cutting with the knife and then putting this powder on, and it was hot and I didn't feel good. And so my dad says, go, you know, walk back to the house. And I remember it was the first time I was walking and feeling sort of unsteady. And then he shows up and he kind of wakes me up and he goes, here, drink this. And his solution for like 99% of the stuff is to make you drink a huge glass of Pepto-Bismol. So you drink it and then hurl your brains out. Then go to sleep. Oh, that wow. Or salt water. And so I just remember, I don't know what we were doing that day, or if they were doing it for my benefit or what.
Probably
it was.
Not, because we used to work a lot of cattle here when my dad kept him from
going. We'd go jump on them and wrestle them to the ground, mm-hmm. Cut the things off, put the powder on.
And then I remember when your dad came here in 71, I don't know if you were here then. I don't know what he was doing here, but he was here. And that's when my dad and Nacho Molina bought the OROs. We bought them for about 10 years. And that's when we went to Palominas, where they were crossing 1,000 head at a time. They had their own private crossing deal.
I see.
And every Mexican, not every political guy or cop, all shows up with your dad, and here's your dad hugging onto all of them. They're this big, and he's that big.
And then, I mean, I can remember we'd have mini bikes here. I remember I drove a dune buggy here that was my dad's dune buggy.
Yeah.
It just
had
a lot of...
And the last couple of times he'd show up in that motorhome with whatever his name was. And then the last time he was here, maybe that was, I don't know what year that was either, but we got a hold of Mr. Brophy because they were from Bisbee, and he had this dream to do the thing about Texas John Slaughter.
Mm.
So we all met at Keno Springs. There was a restaurant there then. Yeah, that's the place. That was Stuart Granger's house.
Keno Springs was Stuart Granger's house?
Right.
Okay.
And we all ended up with Mr. Brophy Sr., who was pretty old then. We went to his office in Bisbee, and your dad and him went through all these historical files of Bisbee when Texas John Slaughter was the sheriff of Bisbee.
And that was around the same time as Tombstone was happening, right?
I think so.
Okay.
Because all I remember them saying was, Earp didn't like Texas John any more than Texas John Slaughter liked Earp.
Mm.
And there was some animosity. And one time, I don't know if it's true enough, they supposedly crossed paths. Earp was on a horse, and Texas John was in a buggy with his wife. And Earp looked at him because he was some animal, and he had a shotgun pointed at him. So he tipped his hat to Mrs. Slaughter and kept going. And that was something your dad was talking about.
Interesting.
And then we went to the old hotel in Bisbee that Colonel Green started about 1898. And your dad was looking at that, talking about the old cowboys that never heard of elevators. And he was trying to figure out how to make that movie and put that hotel into it and put these...
Elevators?
Cowboys on elevators. They didn't know what they were.
It's like my dog doesn't know. We go in the little box and he thinks we come out on the same floor. He has no idea what's going on in there. That's funny. And then I've been dating a girl for a long time, and her family's from Tucson, and her father's worked in Bisbee for the last 40 or 50 years, and still he's there now, has a construction company out of Bisbee.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, and they know the other family that we were talking about earlier.
Oh, the wife tracks.
Yeah.
That owned the stakeout.
Yeah, all old friends. A lot of history here. Man, did they ever do cattle together?
Once. They bought the Elias calves and sent them to the feedlot. And Louie did not like the cattle.
Mm.
So he sold them to Olin Dreyer. And my dad, your dad, said, you know, let's be friends. And I think Louie had his deal, and he didn't, you know.
Yeah.
They had their own deals.
Yeah.
So after that, we bought that property here.
Mm.
And
the one down by the airport?
By the airport. Because your dad was going to live here. He wanted to build a home here anyway because he wanted to be near the airport so he could get in and out.
I see.
And that was in 65. And then nothing ever materialized. And I think because he couldn't breathe here that well. He also had an oxygen deal. He was a member.
It's tough. Tough to be a big guy and then your body starts going.
He always had a love for Nogales and the San Rafael Valley where he did that movie... Red River.
Was that down here?
That was filmed right here in Sonoyta.
Oh, I didn't know that. I had no idea Red River was filmed there.
Yeah, that's where the ranch, just 10 miles south of, or east of the stakeout, there's a bunch of mountains behind it, and that's where those 400 cattle kept going around and around. And your dad told me that they dammed up the San Pedro, which you could never do today, to get enough water to have the crossing of the Red River, whatever it was they were crossing.
Oh, you're kidding me. Yeah, that was quite a crossing.
That was quite a cross. About 1948.
Wow. Can't pull that off anymore. Are you texting?
I was looking at Red River. It is 1948.
Oh, good. Okay.
And that was one of your dad's better movies. I don't know why he never got an Academy Award.
That was a great movie. And, you know, he wore that buckle forever when he draws that D in the sand. And Howard Hawks wore the JW buckle. Howard Hawks had those buckles made.
Did he?
Yeah, and he gave them. Somehow my dad ended up wearing the buckle that had his initials, and it confused me as a child.
Okay, because I remember he carried that same buckle in his movies.
In the movies and in his personal life. So
And then I met Howard Hawks here when he did El Dorado and what about Rio Bravo, and then one with Robert Mitchum, but I can't remember what the movie they made.
That was Rio Lobo, Rio Bravo.
Something like that. They all stayed at the
El Dorado.
They all stayed at the which used to be a big hotel there on the freeway, and it's not there anymore. And I remember going there with my dad, and James Caan was there, whatever movie he was in. And they were doing and the director, Mr. Hawks, had this theme song he wanted your dad to hear. So we all sat in his suite at the hotel and listened to the song. And
it's like an acoustic guitar song, right?
Something like that. Yeah, I can get the movie out.
It keeps popping up on my YouTube, and it shows the guitar playing at the beginning, and it wasn't something that I remembered from the film, but is the opening of the film. But what were we going back to? You were talking about Red River. Oh, those buckles. I've never seen my father's buckle. It's disappeared. Or the one that had Howard Hawks on it.
Really?
We don't have that buckle. It's gone. And then evidently Howard Hawks' buckle with the JW disappeared when it was sent in for some type of repair. So both those buckles are out there somewhere. And I'm sure one day they'll pop up. Pop up somewhere. It's interesting.
Somebody has them.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of things that I remembered.
There's more things, but I can't remember what I want to talk about now. And yeah, your dad called me. I was at the U of A, and he said, can you take me to Nogales? I want to go see your dad. So I had this roommate there with me. He was from St. Louis. And so we go over. I got a little tiny car. We go to Old Tucson. The sheriff comes out and says, what are you kids doing here? And we're waiting for John Wayne. If you don't get out of here, I'm going to arrest you. No, we're waiting for John Wayne. I'm going to tell you one more time, get out of here, or I will handcuff you. So we're going, what do we do? Nobody believes us. Out walks your dad. Where in the hell you been? I've been waiting there for you. The cop looks at him and his jaw drops. I told you we were waiting for John Wayne.
I can't imagine Man, I'd love to get an hour with my dad.
Well, I wish I could go back and listen to when they played Gin Rummy here. They played Gin Rummy here. And they also Penny a Point, Hollywood, Spades were double, all these different points. And then they'd have score sheets. And your dad was always going, Ralph, you owe me $200. And then the next time they play, and he goes, did you seal the score sheet? And he goes, no, you owe me $200. And they loved to play Gin Rummy. They play constantly.
Oh, my gosh, they play cards all the time. I've never played cards. Marisa plays cards. Aisa plays cards.
Well, I got to play, and Gin Rummy's fun if you got four people that you can play with on all these different deals that they had going. I never knew until my dad taught me how to play it.
I mean, they were serious when they in this house, they'd sit there and play for hours. Oh, and yeah. On the boat, they just played all
day. Nobody got out of that card room.
They played all day. I can't believe Anne was only 36.
When she died. And there's another story that I'm not sure about, but when they were doing McClintock, they came to, somehow, the Williams, who owned the Oak Bar, they were friends of my family, so they got to meet your dad and were friends with him. So I don't know what he was supposed to do there, but anyway, he goes to I hope this story is true. He's on his way to the set in Sonoyta at the Sharp Ranch, and he goes into the Oak Bar, which is a beautiful 1929 Santa Barbara type home. He knocks on the door and he says, I got to see Mrs. Williams, to the lady that was working there. And she goes, I'll get her. She's in the bathroom. Mrs. Williams, there's a man here to see you. Well, tell him to take the horses up to the stable. He's from the other ranch. And she goes back and says, take the horses up to the stable. I don't have any horses. I want to see Mrs. Williams. So she goes back and says, he doesn't have any horses. He wants to see you. Well, there's nobody supposed to be here but him. So ask him who he is. So she goes, well, I don't know who he is. So she had her curlers and a bathrobe on. She comes out mad, opens the door, and there's your dad. She looks at him and just slams the door in his face and says, how dare you? I got to get dressed up.
That's funny. Yeah, he had a lot of fun. The times that I spent with him here were all, he was happy. We were having a good time. It seemed good.
And one summer, and I was, it had to be like in 72, I was an MP in the National Guard at Fort Ord. And my dad was with your dad in Newport Beach. So when I got out of my deal, I came down there and he said, just come and stay with us. So we were there at the house, and your dad was showing his pictures where he was actually asked to be the vice president with Nixon, which I thought was pretty honorable. But he said, I couldn't do it because I'm not a politician, I'm an actor. And he said, I told President Nixon that. And I showed pictures of them walking up and down the beach down there where...
Oh, really?
Where the Western White House was. I can't remember the name of
it.
San Clemente.
Yeah.
So that same time, a gentleman from up north was running for president, and your dad got mad at him on the TV and started cursing him. And you knew what I'm talking about because his picture was above the toilet behind the movie screening room. And with that, your dad got mad and called Captain Pete and said, we're going to Catalina. Get everybody up. So he put us in that big old Pontiac he had, and we drove down and got on the boat and went to Catalina Island in the middle of the night.
Oh, nice.
And it was really fun. And Bert taught me how to scuba dive there.
Oh, really? Well, Bert just went to, he went back to England, finally.
He did?
Yeah, and he's in a home that takes care of guys who, you know, made their living on the sea. And
old sailor's home or something?
Yeah.
So how old would he be today?
He's got to be 90.
Okay.
Something like that.
But still, really nice. He was also the first mate when we were on it.
You know, he spent his life taking care of us kids.
Right.
I mean,
and I think he was on it when we went to Europe, but I can't
remember.
He
got on it when you went to Europe. His brother was on it.
Okay.
And I think he got on in Gibraltar.
Okay, when they were coming back or when
he said he was in the army. The ground was frozen. His crane truck that he was supposed to drive just like slid around. And he got a call from his brother and said, do you want to come down and work on John Wayne's boat? And you can meet us in Gibraltar and we're going to sail back to the United States. And he said, like 5 minutes. He grabbed his jacket and ran.
Well, what did he have to do with underwater demolition? He was a UT.
No, Bert wasn't.
No,
he was just in good shape.
Okay.
He was in good shape. Loved to water ski, liked to lift weights. And, you know.
And another time my family was with your family on the boat. And Jeff and I don't know how we got to Long Beach. But in those days, they had a water plane.
Yeah.
And you left Long Beach for $16 and we landed in Avalon.
Yeah.
And Captain Pete came and picked us up.
Oh,
and took
nice.
Us out to the boat, yeah.
I did that a couple times.
It was amazing because the plane never could take off.
It took forever.
I told Jeff, we may be over there rowing over there.
Jeff, my memories again of Jeff are of a young, I was young, but I was old enough on one trip to get bags of some loco weed, trash bags of loco weed, and stuff them underneath my dad's motorhome and take them back to Newport Beach.
He kept saying, what smells in here? And you go, I don't know. You know, I remember that story.
It's a 35-gallon bag full of marijuana plants. That was fun. Were you in any of the movies?
No.
No?
Just Jeff. They thought Jeff looked like a good bandit because he had that big
Yeah, the big mustache.
Yeah.
He looked like James Taylor.
And he had long underwear on and suspenders, and he was riding. He could ride a horse, though. I was watching him on the movie riding that horse.
I'm going to go back and look.
He was the youngest outlaw, his first job.
Hmm.
Yeah. That was a good movie.
That was a fun time. Did he stay down in Durango for a short period of time?
For a couple of days or a week or whatever it was that he was filming, he came back.
And what was the age difference between you two?
About 3 years, 2.5 or 3 years.
And Anne, she was much younger? Or
Anne was born in 51, I was born in 46, and Jeff was born in 48, almost 49.
Just three kids,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. And did you and Jeff work together?
Little bit, but not much. He didn't like the pressure of the cattle trading part of it. My dad was really, and we got up at 4:30 because and went to work, and he just didn't want to do it.
Mm. And what, like, tell I don't know if everybody knows what you guys did, but you'd cross cattle and then feed them.
We'd cross them and resell them, and then those that we kept, we'd had a feedlot here. We'd condition them and then sell them to different feedlots like. Gila feed yards or Banal or something like that.
And like what I never understood is what, like you cross some and sell them right away.
Some we crossed and sold right away.
And what, like, what's the difference? Why would you keep some or why would you sell some?
Well, because you run out of money. Most of the time we were a trading company. And my dad would go down and buy like 40,000 cattle a year. And after he had sold so many, in those days nobody knew how to wire.
Mm.
They'd always tell you, well, the check's in the mail. So we were always behind the eight ball on our line of credit because we had to pay for the cattle the day they crossed. And sometimes we didn't get paid for 8 or 10 days.
And so if you buy 40,000 head of cattle, is that...
Well, that was over a year.
Over the whole year.
Yeah.
So you committed to whatever they had down there.
We'd go down and make contracts in those days.
And you'd look at them first.
And you'd look at them, or you knew the people after a while. You just, what they called a compromiso moral.
Mm.
Once you bought them, you always had a first refusal on the cattle.
I see.
And those days are gone.
Yeah, but that's a lot of cattle. 40,000 head of cattle, that seems like a lot.
Well, it does. In those days, it wasn't, because that's what my dad did. And then he had ranches. He had a ranch in Ashfork, a ranch in Springerville. We had a ranch in Oracle, and we had a ranch in Three Points, plus we had three ranches here. So we ran like 1,000 cows.
And all the ranches were to graze the cattle, or just to hold
them? Well,
we had
different times, and we sold them. He was trying to get away from northern Arizona because of the logistics of distance.
Mm.
So he leased Rio Rico for 29 years. And we had the Jeff's Ranch on the other side of it, and we ran 1,000 cows here and 1,000 steers.
Wow. So 2,000 head of cattle at a time on the land.
On the land, yeah.
And would they, you got to feed them, right? There's not enough to graze.
Well, we'd pull them off during the conditions of the, you know, droughts or if it rained, and then we'd put them back on or something like that.
Mm.
And we had a lot of cowboys. You can't find a cowboy anymore. They're a dying breed.
Mm. And so how's that business happening now?
The Mexican government has pretty tight control because everybody, they want to know how much money you're going to get in Mexico. Because I guess if you sold your steers to me for $10, you might only put $8 back into Mexican government.
I see.
And it has to be wired. Everything now is wired.
Wow. Just so everybody in the audience knows, when we're talking about crossing cattle, the Wingfields are down in Nogales, Arizona, and Nogales crosses the border. There's Nogales, Sonora, and then there's Nogales, Arizona. And back in the day, you could just walk across the street.
It was a whole different world.
And go from Mexico to Arizona. But anyway, crossing cattle means you're buying some cattle out of Mexico and bringing them across the border.
And reselling
into
them.
The States and reselling them.
And our main port was Nogales, but we also crossed in Douglas, Naco, Columbus, New Mexico, a little bit in El Paso, and Sasebo, and also in San Luis Rio, Colorado, which is south of Yuma.
Mm. So a lot of history in the business and a lot of history in those locations.
Right. Well, my dad came here in 1938 and started buying cattle, I think for a dollar a head when the Depression was on. He couldn't find a dollar, he told me.
And how did your parents meet?
My mom came out here and went to the U of A in the 40s.
Oh, really? Okay.
She said there was like 400 students, there was 370 women and 34 F guys. And my dad had a ranch lease in Mexico, and we all met at the Rancho Grande and started dating, and then they got married in 1945.
What's the Rancho Grande?
It was a big resort here in Nogales. It was the real fancy resort. They had a rodeo arena. They had horses. They had a radio station there. And your dad told me stories that he was there in the 48 when he filmed Red River.
Because there's a song that says El Rancho Rio Grande. Yeah. And that's what they're talking about?
And he said he was at the bar there with somebody that was lifting one of his friends up and down over his head. And he said, you know, we were all so drunk, we didn't care. I don't remember who it was. But that was a big water hole in Nogales.
Mm.
And it was built in the Depression when they had when they passed the law, you couldn't drink alcohol here, the prohibition. So everybody would stay there and go across the line.
Oh, I see.
At the cavern and places like that.
The cavern, I can remember as a boy running across the bridge and, you know, going back and forth and getting rides from people to go down to Mexico and grab something to eat or to walk around or go to the little shops to get whatever it was. I remember loved bolillos, and I still miss those little, remember those, like the little muffins they make, the little bread buns?
Still get them right here.
Oh. When I was a kid, I put away a lot of those.
In fact, we just bought some the other day. We made sandwiches out of
them. And then, so the water, I vaguely remember when you guys were going through the water thing. So a lot of people like you had significant water rights attached to their land. At a certain point, the state was mandated that they had to come up with some more water rights. So they went on a campaign of trying to get the water rights or forcing people to give up their water rights.
Well, we had to prove that every well was ours. And then we had to have the well delivered to the state with how deep it was, when it was drilled, and how much water. If it was over 30 gallons a minute, then you had another license where you had to pay so much on the usage of the water.
Oh, I see.
And that was started back, I think, in the 80s or 70s. I can't remember. I guess the 80s. Of course, nobody ever saw this drought coming. Now the Colorado River's drying up.
Yeah.
And they claim between Tucson and Scottsdale, they may be out of water.
And now, one, you've got the drought, you've got the Colorado River drying up, you've got mass construction of homes up north, right?
All over Tucson.
Yeah, Tucson. Phoenix. You know, Phoenix is a major sprawl. Southern California, major sprawl.
Las Vegas takes a big part of the water.
And Nogales across the border went from, you know, a small little pueblo to 500,000 people, you were saying.
Yeah, to a small city to a big place.
So that's drained your water here in Nogales.
The river, right.
Because I remember as a boy, there was that, you know, there was a lake by your parents' house, and you were telling me that river flowed, and I vaguely remember that. And I'm shocked that Red River was filmed in Patagonia and that there was enough water to film the water crossing in that film, because it looks like a massive river.
Well, I remember talking to your dad, because I always asked some questions, and, your dad was very open about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, we just went in and dammed the San Pedro up. And when we were with him someplace, he was telling me how tough it was to be an actor in the 30s on actors and horses, especially in Westerns. They said they'd tie ropes around the horses and then go bend hell for leather, and then they'd pull the rope on the horses, and the horses would just flip over. And the guy riding it better be able to get to the side, or he'd have the horse on top of
him. Yeah.
And he said after a couple of times, those horses wouldn't run.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because they just knew what was going to happen.
You know, you watch some of the early films. There's some pretty crazy horse falls.
I mean,
those guys
really
are going very fast
instead of going sideways like they do today.
I did one on a motorcycle where they put a cable to the front axle of the front wheel on the motorcycle, and then we rode towards each other. And you put a mark, you know, a few feet before that cable gets tight, and you jump in the air, and your motorcycle flips.
Oh, my God.
That's when I knew that wasn't going to be my career, because there was no trick other than a few pads and hitting the ground. Teddy?
Till we meet again.
Yeah, thanks for taking us.
Yeah, I'm glad you came. I haven't seen you now since 2002, I guess.
Taking us back in the Wayback Machine. A lot of people are gone.
They sure are. Well, we're still here.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll be here in 20 years.
And we had a lot more.
We'll do it again.
We're going to have to start playing cards. I feel like cards are your demise. Once you start playing that, you're done.
Thank you so much for listening to the John Wayne Gritcast. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you like what you heard, give us 5 stars in the Apple Podcast app and follow us on social media at John Wayne Official.
Slap some bacon on a biscuit and let's go.